Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 26th. I'm Ray Graff. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry, and Coin joins us again today to answer your antique questions. So if you've recently found something in the basement or something in the attic, or maybe you found it at a yard sale and you think it's worth a fortune, and you're probably wrong, but give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email address. The number is 800-348-2551. So rummage around, find your collectibles. Mark Lawson will answer your antique questions coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing antiques today. We welcome back Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry, and Coin. After running a traditional antique shop and opening a gallery on Broadway in Saratoga Springs, Mark was approached by Sotheby's in the year 2000 to assist organizing and curating single-owner sales. Mark is a past member of the American Society of Appraisers and has completed courses in the NYU Appraisal Studies Program and Period American Furniture. He's also certified in diamond grading. Mark travels throughout the region, meeting with clients, helping them settle estates and family treasures. You got a question about your family treasures? Call us. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org, as some people have done. voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email. The number is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson, how are you?
Oh, great, Ray. It's lovely to be here. So nice to see you. You've been gone, and you were missed. We missed you.
Well,
I missed you.
I was only gone for a week.
Yeah.
it could have been like 7 or 8, you know? But here we go again. And you sent a great picture, actually, just today. I put it on the web page before it posted. It's of a lamp. Originally, I looked at it. I said, it's a Tiffany lamp.
Yes.
And then the story is much better than that. You picked that up.
Yeah, no, I looked at it. A client brought it in. I looked at it. I said, wow, what a lovely Tiffany lamp, although I hadn't seen that pattern before. Looked a little closely, and it wasn't Tiffany. It was marked, had a nice high-quality mark for a company, Bigelow & Kennard, which was a high-end retailer in Boston for much of the 19th century. Turns out that they had a high quality, large, well organized workshops making table lamps in the same manner and style as Tiffany. And this was just a lovely example.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. And we put a picture of it up on the webpage, WAMC.org, just to hit the Vox Pop page for today. And what I loved is you sent a little note, which I posted on the page, about how you found out about this. And to me, this is an exciting part of the job. And this is, I guess, something that you do all the time. You're researching these oddities and old items. And tell us about that.
Well, of course, the internet's an amazing resource now.
Helps.
And as time goes by, we have connections to more and more data to pull from. But like as an appraiser will, you know, research different items that they have to assign a value for, see what comparable things, similar things have sold for in recent history. You know, I'll go on and the first place I look is in, you know, subscriber database, you know, appraisers' databases of sales records.
Yeah.
And in this case, I found an example of another lamp by this company that had sold. And in the auction listing, there was a reference to another sales listing, and I went there, and there was it showed this article and a link to the article, which was from a popular magazine from 1910, and it was an article all about this company, Bigelow & Kennard. But what was wonderful is it shows a bunch of their lamps, and so it was probably like a little bit of a marketing article from that time. You know, but it describes in fine detail the actual process from, you know, sheets of glass and cutting little pieces and a design all the way through to a finished lamp, which was just fascinating to read how the workmen would sit there. And, you know, and it went through often a series of workmen sitting there and with wooden molds that they were piecing the lamp together on. And sometimes the design was stenciled on the wooden mold so they could match the little pieces that they were fishing out of a pile of cut pieces. And it was just it was lovely to find such a detailed document about how these lamps were made, and so which I'd never really seen before, and it was a really fun experience. And it, of course, with anything, when you do this research and you find this information and you learn these stories, it makes the item become more alive.
Yeah.
Right? It just makes it like grow in the space that it sits in.
Now, this you said was late 1800s, right?
Probably 1905, 1910.
Okay. And are there a lot of existing examples of Bigelow and whatever?
Kennard.
Kennard.
K-E-N-N-A-R-D.
I mean, we've all heard of Tiffany. There's plenty of them around. But are there still some of these around, aside from the one you have?
Well, I found a fair... if I searched on... Here's a good metric, but if you normalize for popularity... it's hard to know for sure, but if I do a search in one of the standard databases on Tiffany lamp, I'm sure I'll come up with at least 5,000 to 10,000 listings covering the last 10-12 years.
Yeah.
In this case, I came up with forty or 50. So
That's a big difference.
It does suggest that they were reasonably mass-produced, so there's enough of them out there. If it was just some little company doing a one-off, and of course my hope in terms of value for the client was that, Bigelow Kennard ordered them from Tiffany's, and Tiffany's made them for it, so I had a authentic Tiffany lamp in disguise.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. And that would only, that's the factor where, if you have the right name, it's worth more. You know, the lamp would probably be worth at least double what it is worth if it was, in fact, from Tiffany's. But it was also, it was a lot of fun to discover this story and
yeah.
learn more. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems counterintuitive to me. If there are so many fewer of these and the quality, as you say, was excellent, and this is a nice example, you'd think this would be worth more.
Well, you know, then we step into the infinitely entertaining realm of human psychology. So, you know, something can be an exquisite masterpiece, and if nobody knows about it or cares about it, what's it worth? Whatever somebody who chances upon it think they can afford to pay out of their pocket.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you got tens of thousands of people looking around for something, and a lot of them have, you know, substantial resources to spend, sky's the limit. Can be worth anything, even if it's something that isn't particularly lovely.
Yeah. All right. Well, before we get to our phone lines here, let's grab a couple of emails and then we'll take a break. Phone lines are just beginning to load up. 800-348-2551. A couple open lines left. And then as we go on with the show, if you hear somebody hang up, that's a good time to call. 800-348-2551. This one came into our email box, and this is from Jerome. I'm a horn player and have amassed a collection of brass instruments over the years, many of which are quite old. Some are not really in playing condition, but are very interesting looking. Could you speak to the value of them in general?
In general, this is a realm of collectibles that's reasonably popular. I think with many, you know, older collectible technologies, you know, the electronic virtual computer age is changing things, that there's less and less demand, less interest, and in some cases or generally there's less value. Some of the older unusual instruments are very interesting to me from a technical and a design perspective.
Yeah.
But what I see is the instruments that have the most value are the very highest quality instruments, the top of the line instruments made by the best makers, you know, like a Gibson, you know, the Gibson like mandolin.
Oh,
the
okay, yeah, sure.
The Gibson mandolin, or you know, the top of the line Martins, or
Stradivarius violin.
No, there's some horn makers. I had a King
the 50s era, like. One time I had a 57 King 3B, which was a jazz trombone,
sure.
Just a great horn.
Yep. I had a solid silver special double-walled flute one time that, you know, was worth like $10,000 plus.
Did you play
No. No, I'm not a flautist,
okay.
I'm afraid.
All
but
right.
Yeah, so generally those are the most valuable.
Yeah.
But then you get, you know, there's always oddball, you know, strange little pockets of interesting things. You know, I came across an early trombone and it wasn't called a trumpet, and it had a really it was unusually proportioned, and it was kind of cool, and you know, it was worth, because of it was a really unusual design, it was worth, you know, three or four times what just
yeah.
kind of like a average one of the period might be worth, that had some antique value. So you know, the unusual, and but again, I think it comes back, there's all different nuances.
Yeah.
In this case, when you're talking musical instruments, there's a whole other dimension, which is the quality of sound that a really fine instrument will make to somebody that's a really good musician.
Correct.
And really appreciates that stuff. So that's a whole nother dimension that can, you know, and they're, you know, cue Stradivarius here, okay?
Right.
So that's the kind of thing, you know, oh, you got 500 years of mellowing and special woods and construction methods, and you somehow you have a sound that people with the right ears can be like, oh my gosh, it's like a Da Vinci.
Yeah.
The Da Vinci of sound.
500 years of mellowing. I like that. About 50 years of mellowing, and it's not working. Let's take a break. Mark Lawson is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email address. It's antiques today, don't you know? I'm going to show Mark some pictures in the break, and then we'll talk about. Doesn't always work when people send pictures, but we'll do the best we can. We'll be back. Jazz unit here on A Bumper Music. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email address. It's Vox Pop Antiques today with Mark Lawson. Just a reminder, Mark Lawson, and you
yes.
take note of this.
I am.
The lockbox opens on Monday. You know what the lockbox is?
I have no idea.
Oh my gosh, you don't even listen to it. You don't listen to the station. That's fine.
I'm sorry.
Listen, man. So we have a fun drive October 16th, right? That's
yep.
the on-air drive. Well,
okay.
The lockbox opens on the 2nd. That's Monday. You know? No. Yes. And everything that goes into the lockbox.
Who's not listening?
WAMC, Zach the engineer. WAMC.org is the website. People make pledges there. And everything in that lockbox stays until day one of the on-air drive, and it shortens the drive by a lot.
Wow,
so
I bet.
If our listeners want to make a pledge now and get back to our regular programming, because, you know, we'll be doing fundraising all day long, basically, until it's done. So WAMC.org, and you'll hear much more about this. Now, about these pictures, this is from Linda. Silk Army pillow casings? Found these that my dad had sent to my mother while serving back in 1945. Any value? And we see some lovely silky pillow casings. One says U.S. Army for freedom and security. Another one says beautiful Washington with a picture of the Capitol and the Treasury building and the White House. And then,
I like the one from Nova Scotia. I love Nova Scotia.
Yeah,
and it says Maritime provinces.
It says mother with spirit calm as the summer sea moving in sweet serenity. I'm sure there is no other in all the world like you, dear mother. And that's from Halifax.
Hey.
It's a lovely sentiment. Is it worth anything?
Well, it's worth something. It's the kind of collectible that, you know, we've talked about before here, has as a population that remembers them, that these items have meaning to, has passed on, moved on, passed away. The interest in the collectible items has passed on, gone away as well, and they're worth much less. Many times, helping people with estates, I have seen these, still see them. You know, depending on what I think the ones that actually are military themed, you know, with the Army, the Navy, the Marines, Air Force, are going to have a little bit more collectible value because people collect that stuff. The more generic kind of greeting card themed ones, probably less so. But you're probably looking at, you know, $5 to $15 or $20 a piece on a good day, that kind of value. So a little bit, but okay, probably not a lot.
You know, I love those pictures and I love those old pillowcases. Does it ever break your heart when something is big in a family and, oh God, this is a family heirloom, and then you say, meh, it's worth $6?
It's hard. You know, what's hard often is I get people that they come to me with high hopes, you know, for a variety of reasons. And even, you know, so it's difficult for me to disappoint people. You know, a lot of times I wind up being a little bit more of a social worker than an antique
psychology
dealer or
appraiser. You said it again.
And, you know, so that part is hard. I try and, you know, put a context to it. I try and explain it to them and, you know, kind of hold the space for them, whatever. But that can be difficult, especially when people are, you know, hopeful and maybe a little desperate. They need money for the property taxes or whatever the heck it is. Don't bring me down too far, man.
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is our guest. Jeff in Amsterdam. Jeff, you're on.
Thank you very much. I've got two items that I'd like to get some information on. One is a very large engraving painted by J.W. Hill, engraved by C. Mottram, view of New York Harbor. There's several representations on the web that I've seen, but I'm curious as to what the value might be and how to sell it. I've also got some antique silverware. It's a full set, 12 place settings, Edwardian. All of it is Edwardian except for the knives. I'd like to get a sense of value on that and if it's appropriate, where to sell it.
Yeah, with the silver, do you know who the maker is?
I don't have it with me right now. I do have a receipt somewhere. I'd have to dig a lot for it.
If barring it being by an exceptional maker or exceptional by nature of its design or craftsmanship, you're simply looking at a market value that corresponds to the value of the silver in it today. These people don't entertain or keep house in the same way, and unfortunately, that's the way that values have gone generally for solid silverware. And if it's not solid silver, then it's going to be have a very modest value. That is, if it's silver plated in some manner. So you can just weigh it, and you know, but you know, you're probably looking at melt value somewhere around $20 a troy ounce today. The Mottram New York Harbor engravings, I think, if in decent shape today, maybe they're going to be in, you know, a nice example at auctions, probably going to be somewhere between $500 and $1,000.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I'm sure they probably have sold for much more than that in the past, but again, in this digital age, they're, you know, the same way that photography put all the painters out of business because people didn't, you know, need to have a picture painted of a relative to remember them. You know, the digital imagery has changed the marketplace for non-digital images.
Jeff, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Mark Lawson, Ann in Walden. Ann, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi,
I have two questions. I'll ask one and then let you guys decide if you're going to give me permission to ask the second one.
Okay.
I know how you guys work, and I appreciate it, so I don't want to overstep
problem.
My...
Well, geez, you know, okay. You're already putting me on the spot. You'll probably get the second question, so just go ahead.
It's a skill I have.
Yep, nicely done.
I have a Louis Vuitton wardrobe trunk with the drawers and the hangers that my mother bought well over 50 years ago at an estate sale. She always said to me, only sell this if you're going to use it for graduate school for my granddaughter. So we're thinking about law school, and I know it's worth quite a bit of money, but I don't know how to sell it. How do you do that?
How did you spell the, I got the Luigi part. What was the second
word? I'm sorry. A Louis Vuitton.
Oh, Louis Vuitton. Wow, that's a lot
different
than
Louis Vuitton. You get a good pizza over there, but that's a different.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Yes. Okay. So, and it's a trunk?
It's a trunk. It's a wardrobe trunk. It's got,
nice.
It's pigskin. It's got the drawers and the hangers in it.
So, generally, the way for you to get the most money in the easiest way is to sell it through a reliable auction house, auctioneer. The kind of thing that you're describing should bring, you know, $5,000 to $10,000. If they're on a good day, it could bring more than that, depending on the condition and the day and, you know, the auction house that you're at and the people that are looking at it. But it's a very, very desirable thing, highly sought after. And, you know, the value could be, it could go higher than that. At auction, the auctions are lovely for sellers because of, you know, auction fever. People get engaged and usually spend more money than they were planning on spending. So that's,
okay.
The conventional wisdom is that's the way that you're going to get the most for a very desirable and valuable object.
All right. And I got a plan. How about a second question?
Oh, thank you so much for that offer. That's fabulous.
Go ahead.
I have something that I don't want to sell, but I kind of want to know the value because I'm putting... I have three daughters. I'm putting their names on the backs of things and so that when I'm gone, they know what they're getting. I have a portrait by Edward Martin Tabor, who I think passed away in the late 1800s. I know that he has something in the Metropolitan Museum, but I also know that that could be in the basement somewhere. So I don't know if he's that... So this is a portrait done around 1886. It was given to me, left to me by his younger sister. It's an oil portrait of his mother. How do I find out the value of something like that?
Well, that's the kind of thing I research for clients all the time. I'd be happy to help you, but Google is also your friend in this case, so you could just plug the artist's name with sale or value or auction into Google, see what comes up, and what you're looking for is not when you find your way to. You know,
auction sites
or records, you know, you want to look for sales results, not things that were offered and didn't sell.
Yep.
And the tendency is to, like, if somebody's looking at something and they see five of them that sold and three of them sold for $200 and one sold for $1,000, they like to think, oh my gosh, it's worth $1,000. But just be careful of the outliers. So you just and it's perfectly natural to be drawn to the outliers. But what's reliable to use is the kind of like the average values that you might see.
All right, Ann, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is our guest today. It's Antiques. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Don't forget the lockbox is open at wamc.org. make a pledge, and keep this quality broadcasting going. Right? Am I right, Mark?
You are so right, Ray.
Yeah.
I almost asked you, how much is in there? But
how much is in the lockbox? No one knows. It's a deep mystery. Let's go to Donna in Warwick. Donna, you're on.
Hey there. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Sure. Go ahead.
We can.
Yeah. Well, this is, kind of nothing you have to feel you're going to be sorry about. I don't have high hopes, nothing exotic. But I do have, because I listened to the program, I did unearth these three magazines that my mother cared very much about because she was a big JFK fan. And so I don't know if there's any market for this or anybody who would collect these kind of things, but I have the Saturday Evening Post of August 14, 1965, in very good shape, with a beautiful big picture of JFK on it, a story in it by Joan Didion about John Wayne. So crazy, these magazines.
Yeah.
And, pardon me?
No, it's exciting. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, the articles and the ads are just a history lesson.
Yeah.
The other one is from around the same period. It's the Chicago Tribune's Sunday Magazine of September 12, 1965, also with a painting on the cover. I don't make out the last name. John Dutternoff, something okay. like that. Anyway, all in very good shape, another one. And then finally, the third one I have is November 19, 1945, Life magazine featuring Big Belt. So they're all in really great shape. So I just don't know. I mean, there's wonderful ads in here, color ads, beautiful hand-painted stuff. I guess when it was designed.
We have something in common because I often in the old magazines like that, I can get lost myself in the fascinating ads. And even that we were talking about I sent Ray a link to the article about the lamp. And there was another article in there. And right. I got totally distracted and lost in that. But no, the same thing happens to me. But more to your question, once we moved into an age of mass production with print media, which really started in the 19th century and exploded into the 20th century, there were so many of these types of magazines mass produced and mass distributed that there's many, many, many more of them out there than there's any demand for. And while they're fascinating and a lot of fun to lose oneself in, they have little or no monetary value. Now, there are exceptions, like the first issue of Life magazine from 1936, I think it is, has some collectible value. There's a Life magazine from 1962 that has a post serial ad in it with a Mickey Mantle and a Roger Maris baseball card attached. If you find that magazine with the card still in it, it's worth $100 or something.
That's
so
all.
So there are some exceptions, but mostly it's the kind of thing that is I say these words a lot, interesting but not valuable.
Okay. Donna, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. So Mark, I said earlier that pictures don't really work when people are sending in questions. I have like 20 with pictures attached. So obviously people are trying to irritate me, and mission accomplished. This is from Ken, and I have to show it to you.
Live to serve, right?
200-year-old painting. Would a 200-year-old painting be worth keeping or selling? I think my wife hates it. I think it's okay.
Well, yes. So this is a type of genre painting that was popular in the 19th century. It's just a portrait of a man in a hat smoking a pipe.
I think it looks like Andrew Jackson after a real rough night of drinking.
Yeah, well, okay.
The
but it's what matters is the details. Who made it and when did they make it? Is it who's it of? So a lot of these types of pictures were painted quickly by commercial artists for decorative purposes. That one seems reasonable quality. It really depends on the artist. So I think more research is merited. Is it signed? Is there any information on the back, on the stretcher, on the back of the canvas?
Yeah.
Is it signed on the front? If it's not signed and just a kind of a generic 19th century picture, might be worth a couple $100.
Yes.
But it could be worth less or much, much more, depending on who made it.
But age doesn't really matter. If it's 200 years old, meh.
There's lots of Roman coins that are, 2,000 years old that are worth $5,
Yeah.
So age doesn't, in fact, matter. But it is a factor to consider in evaluating the value of something.
I like that painting, though.
Evaluating the value. I think that's
right. Evaluating the value. We'll talk about that during the break. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mark Lawson is our guest. It's Antiques Today. We'll be back. Count Basie with a Neil Hefty arrangement there. I think that's after supper here. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Antiques Today with Mark Lawson. We're having such fun. Here's a rare email that came through without a picture. This is from Jan. It's about a Navajo rug. I wonder where to get the value of a Navajo rug. I have assessed. I have all the original documentation from its time of purchase in 1950. Like to sell it or donate it to a museum if it is of value and interest. And that's from Jan.
Okay, so if you have all the documentation and the information about it, again, Google's your friend, easy to research, look for sales records, but even, asking prices will give you a hint if you can find them. That's the kind of thing. You can also email people with pictures. You could email us. You could email Dennis Holtzman at Dennis Holtzman Antiques. You could email Russ Carlson at Carlson Gallery and Freehold. Any competent auctioneer, appraiser, dealer should be able to help you with that. And because it's the kind of thing that can have good value, and any of those people would be happy to help you sell.
Okay, here's another Navajo rug. Julie sent this with pictures. My rug is 10 feet long, approximately. Beautiful design of the Tree of Life. Needs repair. Where do I find a curator to appraise it? I'm willing to donate it to a museum if they'd repair and display it.
Wow, let's see the picture.
Here, you can scroll down on that,
There's more. That's a 10-foot long?
Here, hang on. That's a better pick.
A 10-foot long? Is that a... Well, it almost looks like a yay rug because the Tree of Life appears to be a figure.
Uh-huh. Like a, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty cool. That would take some research. Do I know somebody? Skinner in Boston. Skinner, the auction gallery in Boston.
Okay.
They have I can't bring to mind the name of the specialist there, but they've had a specialist there for years who knows this type of material and could certainly help. So yeah. I'd suggest an inquiry to Skinner in Boston. And if it has good value and somebody is going to sell it for you on a consignment basis at auction, they can advise you as to whether you should invest the money in conserving it or not. And that's a great place to start, I think.
Mark Lawson is our guest from Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques Jewelry and Coin. And let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551 to Poughkeepsie. Rosemary, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have a Tiffany-style chandelier with the daffodil pattern.
Nice.
I purchased it in 1980 from a lighting shop, but they had old and new. How would I find out? Something's telling me it's not real Tiffany, but how would I find out who the maker was or where would I look for a signature?
Usually,
I looked on the metal part on top.
No, usually
on the pieces of glass.
Usually they're marked on the edge of the bottom rim on the inside. There's usually an impressed mark in the solder there, or a little tag that has an impressed trademark that's been soldered in to the solder line along the bottom edge. That's the most common place that good quality leaded glass lamps are signed. You can also check the top of the top rim. Sometimes the handle lamps are marked up there. I don't know if the way that it's mounted will allow it, but the main trick of the trade that's used, at least to determine if a leaded glass lampshade is old or not, is you turn it upside down and hold it in your hand, hold it, support it with one hand, and with the other hand you kind of tap it with the heel of your palm, because what happens is over the course of 50 or 100 years, in moving and in just being, all the solder joints will loosen just a little bit. So old shades, when held and gently bumped with the heel of your hand in that way, will rattle a little bit, where the more modern ones won't rattle at all. So that's one trick. But again, you gotta have some be careful. You don't want to try to do that and drop and, you know, destroy the piece. But that's one trick that is used. But sometimes it can be difficult. I've had numerous times when I've had a lamp that or a lampshade that looks really good, that doesn't rattle, that it isn't signed, and it's hard to know, you know. And one of the things that to keep in mind is, beginning probably around the time that you bought that lamp, they were making very, very good quality leaded glass lampshades in imitation of good quality Tiffany ones, because the Tiffany ones were selling for so much. So there are also relatively modern, very, very, very good copies that are out there. But that's where the rattle test comes in.
Uh-huh. Rosemary, you want to follow up real quickly?
No, I appreciate that. We had seen online or some auction that somebody was selling an exact one, and it was like $40,000. And my daughter got all excited, and I was like, I don't think that's mine. But
a Tiffany daffodil pattern lampshade is going to be worth at least that, maybe more. Wow. So, you know, but look for the signature.
All right. Hey, Rosemary, good luck. Thanks for that one. You know, when I have the stamp and coin guys on, it'll often come up, and they'll often talk about the fact that there are so many forgeries and fakes out there. In the antique world, is that the same deal?
Not to the same degree, I don't think. But maybe once you get up into higher value, mass-produced things, maybe. But no, it's not like the coin and stamp guys at all, especially the coin guys. There's so much stuff that's, because it's relatively easy to copy, you know, a piece of silver, a piece of gold.
Should I
tell you about my Uncle Holland?
Well, maybe on another show. But the thing is, though, some of those early fakes are actually worth money on their own.
Yeah, that's true. I do have somebody that, when every so often in a collection of coins, I'll come across, you know, a counterfeit $5 gold piece or a silver coin, a barber half dollar that's made out of lead.
Yeah,
people collect those, but they are out there, but they're not worth a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to our phone lines with Mark Lawson from Mark Lawson Antiques Jewelry at Coin, and we'll go to Linda in Glenville. Linda, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a sketch, and it is signed. It's a sketch that I believe is of my great-grandmother, and it says, with best wishes to John Fitzgibbon, who was my ne'er-do-well grandfather, and it is signed by Charles Sheldon.
Okay.
Okay.
Charles Sheldon. While he's looking that up, why was your grandfather a ne'er-do-well?
Because he left my my mother and her family when my mother was 5 years old.
Oh, that rat.
And he was never to be seen again. So when we recognized that it said John Fitzgibbon, we were like, oh, my God, that was my grandfather.
Interesting. What did you find, Mark?
I found one example of Gene Harlow that sold for a couple of $1,000s. It looks like decent, nice ones, and I can't bring myself to ask how beautiful your aunt was, but I'm sure she was lovely if he did a picture.
This
looks like
a
most
woman, and I will say that the lips on the sketch have just a little bit of a pink tint to them, and her cheekbone has a little bit of a pink tint.
Interesting.
So it's not a fully developed portrait in that it's got a lot of color, more like a sketch.
It's a sketch. It's not not a lot of color. The only color is the very light pink in the lips and the light pink in the cheekbone.
So it looks like
she's kind of got like an over the shoulder look, like a almost like a come hither kind of look.
Come hither, indeed. there's not two guys sitting here. That's
all
for
right,
sure.
Linda.
Anyway, I think as a sketch, it looks like it's probably going to be something that might be worth in the $50 to $100 range. If it was more fully developed, maybe closer to a few hundred. But it sounds like a lovely work, and what a nice memory to have of your aunt.
It was my grandmother.
Or your grandmother, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I should just keep it. It doesn't really have it. It has no sentimental value to me for a variety of reasons. But so it's not worth trying to sell or anything like that.
It's not going to gain you some sort of windfall payday, no.
Oh, I'm sorry, Linda. Thanks for the call. Now let's go to Hudson Falls. And Jessica, you're on.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Yes.
I found an original Melbourne Brindle painting at a yard sale. I looked it up online. The name, I believe, was called New GE Generator on Tractor. I believe it was an advertisement made for GE when they were developing this technology for agriculture.
Okay.
Why I feel confident that it's an original is the board that it's on. You can see where they've peeled the tape off, and there's a distinct difference in height between the paper and the paint that's on the board.
Okay.
And I'm just curious, like, if either like a dime a dozen, if it's something that might have value.
So with illustration art, I can't tell you how many times generally illustration art tends to have significantly less value than for lack of a better word, normal subjective art. Unless it's like Norman Rockwell or, really very, very well-known illustrators that did iconic, engaging images and such, especially the guys that did illustrations for, like, worked for big companies doing more technical illustrations or illustrations that were made for, to be a part of promotional materials, marketing materials, that sort of thing. In my experience, they generally don't sell for a lot. So I think, but that being said, I think that the value is going to be sort of if it's an original work of art, it's going to depend to some degree on how attractive, how visually pleasing it is in a manner that would lend itself to somebody wanting to buy it for a decoration in the house. If it's now, what was the subject?
It's like rolling hills similar to this area, and then it has a tractor pulling a hay baler and a little boy playing with a puppy on a hay bale, and then there's like a group of men dressed in like clothing from that
and
era.
Is it colorful?
Looks like they're like
Yeah, so
colors are very vibrant.
That sounds like a great subject that could potentially be worth more, you know, on average than a less exciting subject. But more than that, I can't really tell you. Again, I'd steer you to Google as your friend, look for auction records, and, you know, that's make sure that you're looking at realized prices. And keep in mind that I found this most often with illustration artists and their work, they're more like searching for a needle in a haystack, because they tended to produce more and for a marketplace that didn't really disseminate the work. So less awareness and really harder to find value information about.
All right, Jessica, thank you very much. This email from Diane is an interesting one. I have an old chest that was handed down to me by my mother in 2009 when she died at 97. Her mother, my grandmother, said it was a tea chest recovered from the Boston Tea Party. She had it for many years until she died in 1962. She was also a member of the Daughters of the Revolution. Problem is, there is no provenance or written record of authenticity. I contacted an antique dealer and historical societies in Boston, and they confirmed this was an issue. Any suggestions? And that's from Diane.
They confirmed what was an issue?
That it's an issue that there was no written record of authenticity.
Oh, yeah.
Or anything.
So it'd be interesting if they if it's in fact an 18th century tea chest, that is going to have some value. But if it's a tea box from the 19th century, tea was a big commercial product and got shipped back from China to the West by the boatload for hundreds of years. So the boxes that the tea came in generally are not worth an awful lot. Although once you get, but the kind of the inexpensive wood that they were manufactured out of means that the older ones are less common because the wood just disintegrates and goes away. So and other reasons, you know, just less likely for it to survive a long time.
Did any of them survive from the Boston Tea Party?
I have no idea.
Because, I mean, didn't they throw them in the harbor?
Well, some of them, at least, or as many as they could get their hands on.
They didn't open them and then dump them and put the empty, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like they'd be underwater. Who's diving down to get them?
I think, you know, I'm sitting in the wrong seat, you know, there, or you're something.
Well,
I defer to your common sense and intuitive expertise.
Oh, boy, are you off. All right, this is from Catherine, and then we'll probably wrap it up here. This is an interesting question. I have many very old carved ivory pieces. Should they now be destroyed or just thrown away?
Wow. Please don't destroy them or throw them away.
You can't sell them.
Selling them is selling elephant ivory in the is illegal in the state of New York. There are conditions under which you can pass them on to relations, and it's certainly illegal to export them. There are some states in the United States where it still is legal to sell it, but they can't go in and out of the country because of concerns for the African elephant.
Even if they're very old and they were made long, long ago.
There used to be an exception to that, but then they found that people were taking brand new elephant ivory that had been illegally harvested from elephants in the recent past and making items out of it to look old so that they could sell them on the American market at auction. So it was like, well, we got to make it all illegal now because we want to save the elephant. I mean, that's the rationale behind it. Please don't destroy them. That would be unfortunate. But there's not a lot that you can do with them. I guess you could probably donate them to, you know, a museum, nonprofit. Okay. Yeah. So, but don't. Yeah. The idea of destroying beautiful works of art always saddens me. You know, I always like to. It's nice to save, you know, gold and silver that you know winds up getting melted down. You know, when you can, because.
All right, listen, we're out of time.
Okay.
This was fun. How do people find you on the internet?
MarkLawson.com is our website. Our email is MarkLawsonAntiques@gmail.com. And I'm happy to help. And I love doing what I do. It's a lot of fun. And how long can I talk and keep on aggravating
not
Ray?
Not long, man. Not. I only have a little time. I got under. All right, thank you, man. The support comes from the Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, presenting the Fall Family Fun Fest with cider pressing, pumpkin painting, hayrides, live music on Colonial Crafts, Sunday, October 15th, Ashokan Center. And Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, quarriers and fabricators of a schist stone used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Lawson, you've done it again. You gave me no time. Now I need to take a deep breath. Tomorrow, we'll talk climate change with Dan DeLurie. See you tomorrow at 2:00.